Welcome aboard, everybody. You are listening to Boating with Wolf Marine and Tetzloff Yacht Sales. We are a show about everything boating. So if you have any questions or want us to discuss any topics about boating on the air here, give us a call. You can give me a call at 651-439-2341 or send me an email. And in the headline of or the topic of the email should be radio show. My name is Eric Wolf. I am the co-owner of Wolf Marine. We are a marina on the St. Croix River. We're located 1 mile north of downtown Stillwater. At the intersection of Highway 95 and 96, we have slips on the St. Croix ranging in size from 18 to 50 foot. You have a boat in that range, you want to get on the St. Croix River, contact us. Again, my number is 651-439-2341. Check us out on the web, wolfmarine.net, or give us an email, info@wolfmarine.net. And John, who is my normal partner here on the radio, is feeling a little under the weather, so he will not be joining us today, but I will still give him a little plug. So my partner is John Tetzloff. And of course, he always has to spell his name, Tetzlaff, at Tetzloff Yacht Sales. John would always like to, for me to remind you that he is the 2018 Reader's Choice winner for Boat Dealer of the Year Award. He has two locations. His main location is 575 North Main Street in Stillwater, and his second and new location is 451 Second Street in Prescott, Wisconsin. You can reach John at area code 651-214-9463. Check out his website at tetzloffyachtsales.com. And today we have a reoccurring guest. She is part of the Lake Pepin Legacy Alliance, Riley Main. Welcome to our new studio here at our 95.9 Killer B radio station. So thanks for joining.
It's great to be here. Yeah, thank you for having me.
All right, I guess we can start by kind of refreshing us. What is the Lake Pepin Legacy Alliance?
Sure. So, I'm the executive director of the Lake Pepin Legacy Alliance, and we formed in 2009 largely because a number of neighbors noticed that the lake was filling in with sediment and it had been accelerating over time. So they saw new islands growing that hadn't been there before and realized this was a symptom of a larger problem, which was that so much sediment was coming into Lake Pepin, particularly at the head of the lake where it drops out, that boaters were losing access to the lake. It was affecting aquatic vegetation, fish, and wildlife. And so they formed an organization to see how we can address this issue, both in terms of reducing the amount of sediment that comes into Lake Pepin and trying to restore some of the features that used to be there.
How much sediment are we talking per year?
So it's about 1 million metric tons, and I think that can be hard for people to visualize. If you think about a full city block raised to the height of the Fauché Tower in downtown Minneapolis, which is 32 stories, that's the volume of sediment that accumulates at the head of the lake every single year.
That's incredible. Now, where's the sediment coming from?
About 80 to 90% of the sediment comes from the Minnesota River. And within the Minnesota River, two of the 13 watersheds contribute about half of that sediment load. And so it's an area that's just, it's kind of primed geologically to contribute a lot of sediment. It hasn't really reached its equilibrium point as a river yet. So you've got a lot of big bluffs and big ravines that are just continuously eroding. But changes to land use practices and changes to precipitation patterns have really accelerated how much sediment is entering the system and then settling in Lake Pepin.
So what would be considered a normal amount of sediment, or maybe let's say an acceptable amount of sediment coming down the Minnesota as opposed to what we have right now?
Yeah, so what we have right now is about 10 times higher than it used to be. So if you think, you know, a tenth of what's coming in right now might be normal levels. But the state of Minnesota has actually set water quality standards for Lake Pepin, which say that we need to reduce the amount of sediment by at least 50% from the Minnesota River in order to achieve the standards that are going to allow for healthy aquatic vegetation, healthy wildlife and fish.
So most of the sediment, as you had explained earlier here, that it's coming from the Minnesota. What are some of the things that we can do to maybe remedy this situation here?
Yeah, so the biggest impact right now in terms of the amount of sediment coming into the Minnesota and then eventually settling in Lake Pepin, it's really related to how much water is moving through the system at one time. So we can't do a lot to change precipitation patterns, for example. When we get really heavy rains, that's going to flush out the whole system. There's not a lot we can do about that. But there are things that we can do to try and hold the water back. So not all of that water is getting into the system at one time. If you think about, you know, why does soil erode? Well, one, it's because there's nothing holding it in place to keep it stable, like root structures. And then two, it's the force of wind or water moving across it that sends that into the river. So if we can plant crops or buffer strips, for example, that have really strong root structures, that's going to hold that soil in place. And then there are other things we can do that hold the water rather than, you know, crops can also hold the water. You know, if you've got big root structures, they're going to take up more water than something with, you know, you think of how deep are the roots of your grass at home,
right?
A couple inches, that's not going to hold a lot of water. But people have put in little dams or berms on their property to help just slow that water so that it has more time to get into the system and it's not flushing it at one time.
So it's basically some type of sustainable crop growings and sustainable vegetation is probably a major part of it.
Yeah, and it's pretty interesting. There's a crop called kernza. So I don't know how many of our listeners are familiar with cover crops, but it's kind of not a totally new practice, but a practice that's been gaining some traction in the agricultural world. And kernza is a sustainable wheat, and there's been interest from General Mills and from Pepsi in trying to market this wheat. And the roots are like 10 feet deep. So
wow.
If you imagine, you know, bringing this crop to the market where it can really hold water and soil, that would be amazing for water quality and ultimately for Lake Pepin and even down to the Gulf of Mexico. I mean, we need that root structure to hold everything together.
Right. So you're saying that consumers could possibly help out with our projects here by consuming this style of wheat?
Yeah. And so there's still a lot of research and development that needs to go into it. But it is exciting that some big companies are interested in this product. And my understanding is that some bigger companies, if they see a 2-3% change in consumer preferences, that's enough to get them to look into a different way of producing, you know, whatever supplies that they would normally produce, whether it's granola bars or beer. There's actually a couple breweries in the Twin Cities that are using this crop to create their beer. But there's not a big enough market for it yet.
Right.
And there isn't enough grain yet to make it,
So with all these microbreweries that are coming up here, listen up there, folks.
Yeah.
You microbreweries, not only could you advertise that you're helping the environment, but, you also can put out a great product that many of us enjoy, right?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
So what are some of the other things that the Lake Pepin Legacy Alliance are working on right now?
Yeah, so of course, trying to address upstream issues of sediment, that's a huge focus. We have to keep working on that because anything else that we do is going to be limited in its lifespan based on how long it takes us to fix the heart of the problem, which is how much sediment is coming downstream. But in the meantime, we can't just let conditions in Lake Pepin, continue to degrade, which is what's happening now. So we're working on a large-scale restoration project in partnership with the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources, the Minnesota Department of Natural Resources, and the U.S. Army Corps of Engineers, which is essentially, we're leveraging $10 to $15 million of federal funding to try and improve recreational access for boaters where that sediment has filled in and access to harbors has pretty much been lost, especially during low water, but also improve the ecosystem in the area. So that's, healthy overwintering habitat for fish, migratory bird habitat, restoring floodplain forest. So we can do a couple of things at once and utilize these federal dollars to try and make improvements while we work on this other issue.
Along with federal dollars, how else are you funded?
The organization?
Yes.
Yeah, so we get a lot of grants from local foundations, the McKnight Foundation. We just got a grant from 3M to start a citizen-led water quality monitoring program so that we can really get citizens in the area engaged around what are their local tributaries contributing to Lake Pepin, and make sure that, you know, people are good stewards. You know, we're not just pointing the finger upstream, but also people locally are really paying attention to what's happening.
Yep.
So that's been exciting. And then a number of local foundations are funding us. But we also have a really big member base. And our member base actually contributes about 35% of our total budget.
Okay.
Yeah, that's pretty good. We're just getting into our year-end member drive, which starts November 1st and goes through the end of the year. And that's super important for us to be able to maintain our operations, is having those members contribute and be a voice, you know, be a rallying cry around the communities in Lake Pepin.
No, your members, I would assume that not only do they contribute financially, but they must help kind of work on projects also. How do they do that? Or what do they do there?
Yeah, a lot of it is political support.
Okay.
You know, if you're thinking about trying to get $10, $15 million in federal funding, you need to have some political support behind you to get those dollars, and at the state level too. So the more members that we have, the more political clout we have. We can go to our legislators and say, you know, we have 1,000 people behind us, and we have letters of support from every community around the lake. So that's really important. It is, you know, the dollar amount helps us keep the lights on.
Sure.
But the voice and that presence and the advocacy piece, that's what helps us actually get projects done.
Yeah. And it takes people.
Yeah,
you know, and members. So I think what you're doing is a great deal. I wish me being on the St. Croix, I would love to see something happen on the St. Croix. I know that the St. Croix is a whole different ball game than Mississippi, Lake Pepin, the Minnesota River, Mississippi River. But I think that'd be a wonderful thing for someone to start on the St. Croix, something to advocate more for the St. Croix. I know the St. Croix also is filling in. We have problems with, especially north of the Stillwater Bridge, where I'm located up there. I would like to see them do the same thing. Now, with your dredge spoils, I guess we can't call them spoils anymore. It's not the proper thing to call them. But with your dredge material, all right, what are they doing with all of that? As they're dredging, obviously they have to dredge to keep things open, especially on the mouth of the Lake Pepin there. I know that we've had many reports of groundings of boats down there, so I know that they're doing some type of maintenance down there.
Yeah, the Corps of Engineers, so they dredge to about 9 feet, and they have to keep the navigation channel open. I want to say about 25% of all of their dredging on the upper Mississippi River is done at the lower end of Lake Pepin. So they have a 40-year dredge management plan, and it's so much material that they're running out of places to put it.
Okay.
They also need to do dredging at the head of the lake, where we're experiencing all of this sedimentation. But they also don't have any place to put that material. So they haven't been able to dredge as much in that area just because they don't know what to do with it. And one of the reasons that we're able to get access to federal dollars is that they can actually use material from the lower end of the lake to construct peninsulas and island extensions, which help break up wind. They help reduce the resuspension of sediment that happens with wind and wave action. So you get clearer water that brings back the healthy aquatic vegetation. And then they can use the mucky, siltier material at the head of the lake, almost like topsoil. So then they can vegetate those islands to help create or restore floodplain forest in the area. So
now, these islands that they are creating, they will be able to be used for recreational boaters also. I mean, can the people use them as camping spots and stuff like that?
So we're still in the middle of the feasibility study and defining what these concept features are going to be. So we haven't totally finalized all of the features and what they'll look like. They will be part of the Wisconsin DNR's wildlife management plan.
Mm-hmm.
So certainly if people want to use them for hunting or, hiking and wildlife viewing, They can definitely do that. And I believe, you know, in terms of boating, if you want to bring your boat up to one of these islands, that you'd be able to do that. But I don't think that they are available for, like, having a campfire overnighting on the island.
Well, along with also making, you know, the main channel deep, I understand that they also are kind of preserving wetlands also.
Yeah, so part of the project would be creating wetlands and restoring that wetland community and the plant community that's associated with wetlands. So there's a whole range of different wildlife that's going to benefit from these projects. I mean, the birds that are attracted to floodplain forests are going to be different than, you know, the turtles and the other migratory birds that are attracted to wetland plant communities. So we're really benefiting a whole range of species through this project. And also the additional benefit of benefiting the people who use the river. So I think if you think about, doing a habitat restoration project just for the sake of habitat, that's awesome. But if you're also improving access so that people can get out there and they can actually see this area, that's going to really give us the best bang for the buck. We want people to be out on the lake, enjoying the lake with their boats, but we'd rather have people out enjoying the lake with a really vibrant ecosystem.
Absolutely. I mean, and that's what it's all about. Clean waters, clean boating. It's all a great thing. Along with you creating, like you had said, the wetlands and so on and so forth, you know, the duck hunting, which I love to duck hunt. In fact, that's where I'm off to. I'm actually off to South Dakota for pheasant hunting this weekend.
Yeah.
So I am a hunter. All of that helps, especially, you know, when you have great habitat for the wildlife, everything else falls into place.
Yeah, definitely. And definitely for fishing in the area, too. I mean, it's filled in so much. If you were to kayak through the area that's within this project area at the head of the lake, your paddle will hit the ground. I mean, if you look at Lake Pepin and you think this huge open expanse of water, you expect it to be deep. But if you get outside the navigation channel, which is 9 feet, you will hit ground almost immediately. I mean, it goes from 9 feet to 1 foot. Almost instantaneously. And so if you're thinking about, you know, where should I fish, you need that, those deeper pockets of water, and you need the vegetation there that provides structure for fish. So if you're trying to get out and find good fishing holes, this project is going to help create new ones. So I think, you know, some people have said, well, let us know exactly where you're going to do the dredging so that we can come out and find those spots. I don't want to, you know, give anything away yet.
That's for you to find out.
But it is exciting. Yeah,
yeah. That's all part of fishing. We just can't have it so I give you all the good spots. You got to find them on your own. We are finishing up here with our first segment here. So if you want to stay tuned, we'll be back here again with Riley Main, who is what are you?
I'm the executive director of the Lake Pepin Legacy Alliance.
All right. Thank you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
A convenient location in Protected Bay. Shouldn't that be where you harbor your boat? If so, dock your boat at Wolf Marine in Stillwater. Hello, this is Eric Wolf. After all, why have a boat if you can't get out onto the water and enjoy it? My grandparents, along with my father, established this marina at the intersection of Highway 95 and 96, just a mile north of Stillwater in 1957. By being just north of downtown, you avoid heavy traffic that keeps you from getting out onto the water. And in our protected bay, we have hundreds of slips ranging in size from 16 to 50 feet, so we can accommodate a variety of boats. Not sure if this is the best place to keep your boat? Come see me. I can answer your questions so you can decide the best place to dock your boat. And because Wolf Marine is a three-generation family-owned marina, you can count on consistency from year to year. Talk to me and get out on the water faster at Wolf Marine.
Hello, this is John Tetzloff of Tetzloff Yacht Sales. If you are thinking of getting out on the water in your new boat, now is the time to talk to me. Whether you're looking at a houseboat, cruiser, motor yacht, or something else. And with the largest selection of boats in the area, not only do we have boats in Stillwater, but we also broker boats up and down the St. Croix, the Mississippi, Lake Minnetonka, all over North America, and even overseas. I will help you find the best boat for you, and because my name is the name on the sign, I will work hard for you before and after the sale. Come visit TetzloffYachtSales.com.
Welcome back to Boating with Wolf Marine Tetzloff Yacht Sales. We have the Executive Director of the Lake Pepin Legacy Alliance, Riley Main, with us here today. We have had a great discussion on our first session here, so we are now on the second. What are some of the things that we'd like to talk about here?
Yeah, one of the things I wanted to mention, we talked earlier in the segment about how much sediment it needs to be reduced in order to meet the water quality standards in Lake Pepin. So we're doing all this great work, building up this restoration project to improve conditions in the area. And there are pieces of the puzzle that consumers can be involved with. But a lot of the accountability actually falls on the state of Minnesota. And so this ties in why it's so important to have members advocate, because Minnesota really is, they're technically required by federal law to be in compliance with the water quality standards for Lake Pepin. And right now we're falling short. I mentioned that, you know, we need this 50% reduction in sediment coming from the Minnesota River. But the state has set an interim goal of a 25% reduction from the Minnesota River by 2020. So that's about a year and 2 months away. Uh-huh. And we've, you know, to date seen a less than 1% reduction in the amount of sediment coming out of the Minnesota River and then making its way to Lake Pepin. So basically, Lake Pepin has seen no improvement. And there's no way that we're going to get to a 25% reduction by 2020. So, you know, where does that accountability fall on the state? A lot of it is out of their control. I mean, you have, again, those changing precipitation patterns. It's very costly for farmers to change their practices. And even with regulation, a lot of that increased cost may end up falling on the consumer. So that's where we were talking about, you know, these market strategies are ways that we can think about how to make system-wide changes, but what's the state's role in actually helping to move that forward? I think a lot of great things are happening, but if we have a group of citizens that are directly impacted by this advocating for the state to do more than they're doing, I think that can be a really powerful message.
So it's got to be a combination effort between the state and private landowners, I would assume.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, it's so tricky because agriculture is such an important part of our economy, and you have anywhere from, you know, huge agribusiness to small family farms. So it's challenging to think about, well, how do you regulate in a way that's going, you know, that's not just going to wipe the family farms.
Exactly.
Right off
the
table.
It has to be fair to the farmer, right, or whoever owns the land. It might not even be a farmer. It might be, you know.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
You know,
I mean, even
the private
in urban
individual
areas,
yeah,
just sending, you know, you have more concrete that's sending more water into the system at one time. And then, you know, you think about if we're not making system-wide changes through a market-based approach, then it's just a lot of add-ons and Band-Aids to try and deal with something that's not really even set up to provide healthy water quality. So
right,
you want farmers to be productive and to make money and have a good business, but how do you do that in a way that's also going to be good for our natural resources, for Lake Pepin and, you know, way downstream to the Gulf of Mexico where you have, you know, fishermen that are impacted by the dead zone down there.
And we've already talked about one great wheat that supposedly is being produced,
yeah,
that's
so
going to have roots of 10 foot or better, and that'll hold the soil. That's a great way, and hopefully we can produce some great beer with that.
Yeah, I'm you know, I have high hopes for that, and I'm hopeful that in the next few years we'll see some progress.
Yeah, and I think we will. I think we're on the right path. I think we have awareness is probably the biggest thing.
Yeah.
And this is one way to get the awareness out there that, you know, people have to get involved.
Definitely.
As we had talked earlier, that probably the most powerful way to do it is to contact some type of your politicians in Minnesota. I'm a Wisconsin resident, so I'm not involved in Minnesota politics. Maybe you could give us some insight in that.
We have a lot of members from Wisconsin too.
All
so
right.
Yeah, actually, if you reach out to your local state representative or state senator or at the federal level, I mean, if you think about the impact of the Farm Bill on how agriculture produces their crops, that's huge. So reaching out to your federal or your U.S. senator or representative is super important, and let them know that you want to see more cover crops. You want to see Kernza, people investing in that crop, and also your state senators and representatives, because they've got a million things on their plate. So sometimes just letting them know that this is in the works and people want to see it happen, it can be a positive message. It doesn't have to be, hey, why aren't you doing this? It can be, hey, we've heard about this cool thing. Are you investing in it?
Yeah, and hopefully that the government kind of subsidizes a little bit, so it encourages the farmer and the private landowner to help out here.
Yeah, definitely.
So, all right. What else can we talk about?
Yeah, well, I wanted, you know, there's a lot of information that I'm sharing,
I'm sure.
And it can get complicated.
And we are getting down to the end of the show here. So
yeah, I just wanted to, you know, give my information out so that if anybody has any questions or wants to follow up with me, they have the opportunity to do that. So I can be reached. My phone number is 630. I'm from Chicago. That's the area code. 630-806-9909. But I have lived in Minnesota now for 10 years. So I hope people won't hold that against me. And then our email for Lake Pepin Legacy Alliance is info@LakePepinLegacyAlliance.com. We have a ton of information on our website, which is www.LakePepinLegacyAlliance.org. And as I mentioned, we have our member drive coming up through the months of November and December. So that's a really fun way to get involved and to learn more. Anybody who becomes a member during this member drive will get a free t-shirt. We've got hats with the Common Merganser embroidered on it. So that's a cool thing. We've got weekly prizes and art giveaways. And if we reach our 250 member goal, so we've got about 500 members to date. We're trying to get up to 750 by the end of the year. So if we get 250 members in these 2 months, Peppy, the Lake Pepin monster, or a version of Peppy, is going to be participating in the Polar Plunge down in Wabasha. So that's our incentive, is the more people that become members, the more likely it is that my colleague dressed in a Peppy costume is going to have to do the Polar Plunge. So that's just another fun thing if you want to see that happen. One more reason to get involved. But it's a fun organization. We have a lot of volunteer opportunities, and it's just a great cause too.
All right. We are coming to the end of the show here. Again, my name is Eric Wolf. I am the co-owner of Wolf Marine. Wolf Marine is located 1 mile north of downtown Stillwater on the St. Croix River at the intersection of Highway 95 and 96. And also, I have to mention John Tetzloff, Tetzloff Yacht Sales. He is located at 575 North Main Street in Stillwater. His second and new location is 451 2nd Street, Prescott, Wisconsin. He can be reached at 651-214-9463. Hopefully we have the right number there. And that concludes our show. I'd like to thank Riley here for the Lake Pepin Alliance.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
Thanks for coming and carrying me on the show. Again, I'd like to thank all the listeners, and we'll see you in 2 weeks.